Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
He's a child. I'm a child. I can't stop talking about the word but with my son. But we will go highbrow right now as we talk baseball with Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports. He joins us on the Grossinger Auto Group hotline. Find over 5,000 vehicles every day at Grossinger.com. It's Speaks and Barry Rosner as we continue with Parkinslessness. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. What's it going to be like next week when he's back?
It's going to be sad for so many people.
I was going to say.
It'd be better for me, though, Jeff.
I might not show up. I'm going to go to Italy for 2 weeks. But before then, I'm going to watch a lot of good baseball. It's fun to watch Jose Quintana be that incredibly good yesterday and see the Cubs have a nice wake-up weekend against the brutal Baltimore Orioles starting pitching staff. But it's an interesting place the Cubs find themselves. They're 5.5 back of the wild card, Jeff. What's your sense of what Milwaukee is going to do here in the second half of the season?
It's going to be really interesting to see just how big players Milwaukee wants to be. And I say that because they have the capability of going out and getting a lot of guys. They have a really good farm system. And it's not just a really good farm system, but they have a ton of outfield depth. And if you look at what they've got in the major league roster, Keon Broxton has turned into a legitimate major league center fielder, and Ryan Braun in left, obviously. Domingo Santana has been a revelation in right field. And then down in the minor leagues, you've got Brett Phillips, who they got in the Mike Fiers, Carlos Gomez deal, who's the sheen has come off him as a prospect a little bit. Lewis Brinson, on the other hand, is probably one of the 20 top prospects in baseball at this point. And he's not Eloy Jimenez, but he's pretty darn close. And he's a tooled-up center fielder who a lot of teams want and would be a really, really good fit for the Oakland A's.
Jeff, you know the Kansas City situation probably as well as anyone. Dayton Moore says they're keeping all their guys. They're making a run. I think they do have the opportunity to make a run, but what do they need to add, and what can they afford to add, and then what is the risk at keeping all these guys and not getting anything for them?
I disagree with you that they have the stuff to make a run, and I know that they're there right now, but I just can't. I can't shake their April and May.
I understand.
It's weird because I can shake the Cubs April and May. And
you can't shake Toronto's, though, can you?
I can shake Toronto's because Aaron Sanchez is back now, and I think he is a huge difference maker. I just don't know if they can climb out of the hole. I think they're still 500 at this point. They're not in a good position, but I think you can make an argument that they're still arguably the most talented team outside of Boston in the East. So I'm not fully giving up on Toronto at this point. I just don't see the Royals having the guns to go and do it, and they don't have anybody to trade. I mean, their farm system is pretty bereft right now.
So then why are they doing this? This is risky for them to not get anything for some pretty good assets.
Well, here's the calculus, and I think I have gotten to the point where I understand now what they're doing. I feel like when you are around 500, and this is the last year of a group that has done so much for your franchise, you almost owe it to them. And I know that sounds stupid because it's like, okay, we owe our fans not sucking for the next few years. And it's going to help if we trade these guys. But I don't know that they can get a ton for Eric Hosmer or for Mike Moustakas.
Really?
I don't know if they can get more than here's the problem with position players. How many teams out there have a first base slot open? I guess the Yankees do. And I guess the Yankees probably would like to at least say to Eric Hosmer, hey, this is what it's like to be a New York Yankee. You may want to come back here. But the Royals are going to get a first-round draft pick when Hosmer signs somewhere else for more than $50 million in the offseason. Is telling your fan base that we don't believe in this team that has proven its ability to come back from the dead, the right thing to say to them. And I have the same question with the Texas Rangers, who are in town in Kansas City this weekend. The Rangers are in the same position. They're right around 500. Mm-hmm. And they could trade Yu Darvish. And they could get a lot for Yu Darvish if they did trade him. But I had a really interesting, insightful chat with Adrian Beltre over the weekend. And Adrian Beltre is a guy who's been playing upward of 20 years now, and he still has not won a championship. And if you go and you reasonably have a shot at the playoffs, and then you go trade Darvish and you go trade other guys who are going to torpedo that shot at the playoffs, how do you walk into that clubhouse and look Adrian Beltre in the eyes and say, we signed you to a 2-year extension. This first year we gave up, and the second year we're probably possibly going to be rebuilding.
By asking him if he wants to go to Boston.
I think that is a perfectly fair and understandable counter argument there. But I also think that sometimes, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, sometimes when we say this team should dump, we don't take into account the human part of it. And there is a human part of it. Even if we from the outside don't want to admit it, mm-hmm. that it's as big as it is big and it's important. And clubhouse dynamics, although intangible things, are very real.
I'm surprised, passing to hear you discuss the human side of something.
I know, seriously. I'm just an automaton. I just sit here crunching numbers all day long.
Right. I assume that's the way you parent, is just with math, you know?
It's funny. We were actually multiplying and dividing fractions earlier today.
Well, just remember, that's important, more important than love and actually hearing their emotions. That's more important. Jeff, you mentioned, we're talking about here the Red Sox third base hole, and this is a real question. If you're the Red Sox, who would you rather have at third base, Martin Prado or Todd Frazier?
See, none of the above. See, I guess both are upgrades. I would take Frazier.
Because I don't know if the White Sox really have any. I mean, they might just have to end up, you know, eating it on Todd Frazier if you're going to get anything at all for him.
Yeah, I think ultimately Frazier probably goes. It's funny, I heard earlier in the week someone texted me saying Frazier to Boston's very close. Check that out. And then I got a text like 15 minutes later saying, hey, I think Prado's going to Boston. So that just gives you a sense of what this time of year is like. And the Red Sox actually are in a good position because they're pretty much the only team out there that needs a third baseman, and they got a couple of decent ones to choose from. So I think I would take Frazier just because I think the power will really play at Fenway.
Mm-hmm.
But Martin Prado is just, he's so solid and he's flexible. You know, if you need him to play outfield in a pinch, he can do that. If you need him at second in a pinch, he can do that. So I'd say Frazier, but it's really just a toss up.
And now that the Nationals have made their play for Sean Doolittle and Ryan Madsen, who is left for David Robertson to go to?
I mean, a bunch of places. Like, everyone still needs a reliever. I think the Nationals still need another reliever. Have you seen who they trot out there every day?
It's brutal. I mean,
their bullpen is god-awful. And I don't know that Sean Doolittle and Ryan Madsen solve the problem that they do have. I think they need another guy. I think the Dodgers could certainly – the Dodgers were keen on Doolittle and Madsen. So I think they shift to Robertson – possibly. I think Zach Britton is really the big, like, Zach Britton to me is the guy who can win you a World Series.
Zach Britton to the Dodgers is a frightening possibility.
Yeah, I mean, does this sound familiar? Team with one really good world-class starter and two really good world-class relievers go to the World Series.
Sounds about right.
We saw that last year. And Dave Roberts is – we saw how Dave Roberts pushed Kenley Jansen last year. Dave Roberts is the kind of guy who's willing to get creative with his bullpen. And, it, you know, by the way, in addition to in addition to Clayton Kershaw, they've got Alex Wood, who's 11-0 with a 1-something ERA.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Rich Hill, who's looked a lot better. They've got Brandon McCarthy. So they actually have, if they stay healthy, four legitimately good starters, and then a lineup that has Cody Bellinger and Corey Seager and Justin Turner and Yasiel Puig. And I mean, put Zach Britton back there with Kenley Jansen and the Dodgers, who are already on a 111-win pace at this point, and who, since Cody Bellinger's call-up, are on a 121-win pace.
Jeez. It's crazy.
Get even better.
Would you, if you're the Dodgers and you can't get Britton, would you go to Brad Hand next? Where would you go next? Would you go to Robertson next?
I mean, once, you know, it's Britton and everyone else.
Yeah.
I feel like at that point, you know, Addison Reed is in the mix. Jim Johnson is a guy whose ability to prevent home runs has really benefited him in this era. Let's not forget, though, they've got Walker Buehler down at AAA now, and he will be up by August, and he will be throwing 99 for 2 to 3 inning stretches in that really like fireman hybrid relief role that so few teams utilize these days. They're like sort of like a Chris Davinsky role, and that is such a luxury to have. A guy of Buehler's pedigree who you can just call up and not pay a penny for. I mean, it's like the Dodgers are adding a huge trade asset without actually making a trade.
Yeah. This segment with Jeff Passan is brought to you by Indeed.com. Are you hiring? Join the over 3 million businesses that use Indeed.com for hiring. Post your next job opening on the world's number one job site, Indeed.com. Between the 2004 and 2007 championships, Jeff, the Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer Red Sox changed three different pieces of the rotation. It was a young John Lester got added in, Josh Beckett, and international signee Daisuke Matsuzaka. So I find myself wondering about Shohei Ohtani. We know the Cubs were in on Darvish. We know the Cubs were in on Tanaka, even though both of those predated their planned window or whatever. How aggressive might they be? How aggressive should a team be for Shohei Ohtani?
I mean, they should be willing to give every penny of their international budget if he actually does choose to come over. I don't know, though, what Ohtani's desires are right now. I don't think anybody does. We don't know if he's going to do it for money. Probably not. We don't know if he wants to win championships. We don't know if he wants comfort, if he wants to be on a coast. There are so many question marks about he is literally like the international man of mystery at this point. What we do know about him is that he throws 98 to 100 from the right side. He has four plus off-speed pitches as well. And he probably will be one of the five best pitchers in baseball when he comes over. And by the way, I think he's 23 years old now. So this is unlike anybody we have seen before. And it's, you know, I don't know that the Japanese pitchers have gotten better since Matsuzaka, because the amount of hype he came over with compared to the actual impact he had, he was ultimately a disappointment, even though one of those years the Red Sox won, he had a really good season. That being said, Darvish has been awesome. Tanaka has not been, but that mainly, I think, this year in particular is because he's got a torn ulnar collateral ligament that he's pitching through. Ohtani, to me, has a chance to be the best Japanese pitcher we've ever seen. And considering the bar that Darvish has set is pretty high, that's saying something.
Feels like we've been talking about Houston adding a starter since the winter meetings, and we are still waiting. What do you think is going to happen?
I think the Sonny Gray sweepstakes is going to come down to Houston and Milwaukee, and we'll see which one blinks first. The Astros don't need another guy, but I feel a lot better going into the postseason with Dallas Keuchel in Game 1, Lance McCullers in Game 2, and Sonny Gray in Game 3. Or if you want to mix up the right-handers with big fastballs and huge curveballs, you go McCullers 1, Keuchel 2, Gray 3. That's a pretty formidable three-headed monster right there. And you can pick and choose your fourth starter, whether it's Charlie Morton, Brad Peacock, Joe Musgrove, Mike Fiers, whoever it may be. There's a lot of depth in the Astros rotation right now, but you add Sonny Gray into there, and Look, they're already the overwhelming favorites in the American League. The American League is just, it's not a great league at this point. There's not a whole lot of top flight teams, but you add Gray into the mix there and they are that much scarier.
I saw the news about Zach Birdie, and that's too bad for the White Sox prospect to be facing Tommy John. What I didn't know until I saw your tweet was that his brother Nick Birdie is a pitching prospect in what, the Tiger system or the Twins system?
Twins. Yeah.
Twins. And he just got Tommy John earlier in this year. You got two brothers both getting Tommy John and both having the ligament damaged. I ask you, author of The Arm, is it familial, or can you think of another brother set that one had the problem and the other didn't? Does that have anything to do with it?
I think it's more the fact that they both throw over 100 miles per hour and that velocity correlates about as strongly with injury as anything else. When you get guys who throw hard, they're probably going to need Tommy John surgery. I mean, that's just, it's not always the case, but by and large, that's just the reality of the business. You're putting enormous stress and strain on the ligaments and tendons and muscles in your arm when you throw a baseball at that velocity. It makes a guy like Aroldis Chapman that much more of a freak. Not just the fact that he can hit 105 miles per hour multiple times with his fastball, but that he can do this again and again and again without getting hurt.
So I mean,
we've seen guys with velocity in Chicago, and the vast majority of them have a scar on their elbow.
You know, I was thinking about your book when I saw the Nate Jones surgery news, because all they were doing is having repositioning surgery, nerve repositioning surgery. And for anybody who doesn't know some of the details on stuff, they literally just going to open him up and they're going to pick up that nerve and move it so it doesn't obstruct, right? I mean, that's crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's, in the past, they did that almost automatically with some surgeries, but they found that the nerve was getting clipped on the bone there, and that there was all sorts. Yeah, it's interesting during the surgery itself to see what they do with the ulnar nerve, because the ulnar nerve is your funny bone. Like, when you get hit on the funny bone, it's actually you getting hit on the ulnar nerve. It's a very, very, very sensitive nerve. And they will take it out. There will be a special doctor there to pull the nerve out and just sort of hang it out on your arm while they're going into your elbow. I know I'm getting a little graphic here, but it's sort of an interesting part of the procedure, just the care that they provide that nerve, because if something hits it, your career can be over.
Wow. So, all right. Don't let Dr. Nick Riviera do the surgery. And don't let Kramer sit in the observation area with Junior Mintz. These are important things.
Cody Bellinger would have no idea what you're talking about.
That's true. Jeff, thanks, man. Always great. Appreciate you.
All right, boys. Take it easy.
You got it. It's Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports joining us right there. All right, we have a texter who has been, he's got one thing that we brought up earlier in the show, and he's just waiting for us to get back to it. He's been spending his entire day waiting for us to get back to it. And we will.
It have something to do with your son and his love of butts?
Nope. Got nothing to do with baseball either. But it might be the most important thing that we've talked about on the show.
I know what it is.
We'll get back to it next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, so our friend Kevin Zipak, who's about to leave and get on with his day, I'm not going to allow him to do that for a minute, Barry. Z, Pack, you there?
Hello.
So some people who are Sox fans qualify as Cub haters, and some do not. I think fair to say, you straddle the line both worlds.
He hates the Cubs.
I don't hate the Cubs at all. I think a lot of their players are fantastic. They're a really fun team to watch. I'm a fan of a lot of the players on the team.
Yeah, but you
hate Jay Zawoski.
Oh, passionately. I mean, Jay Zawoski. And
he's a Cub fan.
And you're in the camp that's like gleefully enjoying Kyle Schwarber's struggles.
No, actually, because he's on my fantasy baseball team. And this is the second year in a row he's let me down. So I'm just kind of like a disappointed parent when it comes to Schwarber.
Why would you draft Kyle LaHare like that?
See, that just can't be.
No, he's a Cub hater.
That's
he's a Cub hater in sheep's clothing. Oh. because he's kind of like a low key. You don't realize he's a hater, but he is.
You know, someday I really want to see somebody in sheep's clothing. You know, I don't think that works without saying he's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Went out of style in like the 17th century.
No,
but
seriously.
You never know. Fashion comes back all the time.
No, somebody can be a wolf in sheep's clothing. If he's just a Cub hater in sheep's clothing, then he's just a weirdo. You know what I mean? He's just walking around in sheep's clothing.
Don't shame him for wearing sheep's clothing.
So how did it feel as a White Sox fan to see Jose Quintana be so incredibly brilliant yesterday afternoon?
He was brilliant. It was conflicting. Obviously, every White Sox fan loves Quintana. The majority of people that I have heard from and spoken to wish him the best. I've even heard people say they're going to root for the Cubs. Even the most staunch White Sox fans / Cub haters say, yes, now I'm rooting for the Cubs, because you can say if the Cubs win the World Series again, it's because of Jose Quintana. You're welcome, Cub fans. So I was rooting for him. Again, he's on my fantasy team as well, just as an aside. I was absolutely rooting for him. I'm glad he had a fantastic performance. Hopefully he's not going to be underrated anymore. I know a lot of people were saying, oh, he's just a 3 or a 4, which
right.
is absolutely asinine. If you just
absurd.
Look at the numbers, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball for like 4 years now.
He's already got the best WAR among the starting rotation on the Chicago Cubs.
He's now the
Cubs.
Best starter on the Cubs, in my opinion,
I don't get that 3 or 4 stuff. That's baffling.
Batty.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bye, guys.
Go away. Barry, I heard this over the weekend from somebody in the baseball media universe, that they had heard it from somebody.
That Aaron Judge is good?
No.
Oh.
I heard that Jerry Reinsdorf was much more willing to make a deal with the Cubs now that they have won it on their own. He did not want to be a part of giving them a big piece to help them win it for the first time. And now that they have won it on their own, then it felt more like they're just like every other team. I know you have pushed against the very notion of Reinsdorfian obstruction.
Well, not entirely, but some of the narrative is just, it's just absurd. I mean, I don't know. I guess
it's possible,
I guess
right?
It's possible.
That made a lot of sense to me when I heard it. Made a lot of sense to me. But, you know, because now they are just like every other team. And maybe you should have thought about them that way before last year. But last year's celebration and all those names on that roster and everything are not going to be remembered like any other team. That's going to be remembered in very, very special circumstances forever and ever and ever.
I guess, if true, there's some logic there.
There's some logic there. There was some logic there to me, too. All right, we'll come back and share more of what appears to be one of the dumbest Hall of Fame quarterbacks that I've ever encountered. We'll share that stuff with you next on 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Can you say that on TV?
I thought he said Ditka Deem, Carrie.
That's
Ditka.
Oh, okay.
Ditka Deem.
It was a before and after on Wheel of Fortune.
One of those. It reminds me of George Ryan at the time honoring the great Dick Butka. Remember that? Remember him honoring Dick Butka one day? It's a hell of a governor. One in a tremendous succession.
That should be the next draft. Favorite Illinois governor who went to prison.
Oh, boy. Do we have enough time to do that? To get them all in there? This segment is brought to you by Cece's. Now it's Cece's party with bacon stuffed crust and new grilled cheese stuffed crust pizza, joining the original topped with pepperoni on the unlimited buffet. Just $5 and change at Cece's. Prices may vary. It is a before and after. That's perfect. That's Dan Fouts, who I have at times really enjoyed in the broadcast booth. He and Ian Eagle do a nice game together. I thought Dan Fouts was unfortunately saddled with Dennis Miller back in the day on Monday Night Football, and he didn't have a chance to really gauge him correctly at the time.
I always thought he was a good color guy.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I loved him as a quarterback. He was a terrific quarterback.
My.
Those Eric Coryell teams were fun as hell. I just know he's not a real good judge or not a real good drafter in taking football players.
I don't think you'd make him the GM of your football team.
I don't think so. In this all-time draft that MMQB did, Peter King's website. And
the first Stephen King over Dan Fouts.
Tell people the first four picks there, Barry, in the draft.
Of the draft itself?
Number one overall was Lawrence Taylor.
That's Mean Joe Green, Johnny Unitas, and the number four pick.
Overall.
To the Dan Fouts team, Ray Guy.
Ray Guy. He took a punter. I'm reading the background here, the explanation. I wanted a roster, says Dan Fouts, that number one could win. That's a good idea. And number two could entertain. We are an entertainment business, right? Ray Guy at four? I didn't want to be stuck at the end of the draft without a punter because there are so few of them that are great. And in my mind, Ray Guy is the best. There's a lot of conflicted thoughts in there. You are an entertainment business. That's right. Nobody's entertained by a punter. I mean, very, very, very few people are like, you know what I need in terms of, am I going to watch this game? You seen the punters in this game? See Marquette King?
On the positive side, if all of your quarterbacks get knocked out, as they were one day at Soldier Field in 1984, you could bring Ray Guy into the game as your quarterback.
There is a commonality, and this is for the texter who said, the only thing I care about right now is hearing Dan Fouts' entire all-time NFL draft.
It gets worse, believe it or not. That's why I was laughing during your last read. Because
you look at his picks.
I kept looking at his picks.
What do you got? At number 40, Jan Stenerud. So the guy got a punter and a kicker within the first four rounds. What else were you laughing at? I saw basically he only took people that he either played with or against.
He goes Ray Guy, Kellen Winslow, Ray Nitschke, Jan Stenerud, Terry Bradshaw.
Which is a terrible quarterback choice, frankly.
Tackle Bruce Matthews.
Okay.
Guard Larry Little. Here's the one I laughed at because with the 88th pick in the draft, he selects cornerback Mike Haynes, who was a terrific cornerback. Yes. But I laughed because the very next pick is Aaron Rodgers.
But he already had Bradshaw, right? Or did he not already have Bradshaw?
No, he did, but but why did he have Bradshaw?
I don't know. But he also took he took Charlie Joyner, J.J. Jefferson, and Kellen Winslow, his three targets with Air Coryell. They take a head coach in the last round of the draft, and he took, wait for it, Don Coryell as his head coach.
He didn't even try.
No. I'll give it to you in a sec. Okay. I did get a couple of my Chargers teammates, and I would have been happy picking my entire San Diego team. But taking Bo Jackson pleased me. He does have Bo Jackson. Because I think if he'd been able to play his entire career without being injured, he'd be the best of all time. The thing that surprised me is that nobody picked me. I am just heartbroken and distraught. Way to take this seriously, Fouts, you jamoke. I came close to doing it myself, but Terry Bradshaw was a good pick.
He should have taken himself.
100%.
He's a better fit for his roster than Bradshaw is.
He's taking everybody on Air Coryell, and then he takes Terry Bradshaw over himself? What are you doing?
Do you have a list of the head coaches?
I do. I do have a list of the head coaches. The head coaches went in the final round. And so all of these GMs, and they're all different media guys and former football front office people. Ernie Accorsi went first. And you know who we took at head coach? Mark Trestman. No, I'm just kidding. But Ernie Accorsi did recommend for the Bears to sign.
John Fox.
No. He took Vince Lombardi, number one overall.
Did Ernie Accorsi's hairpiece get its own pick?
No. So Vince Lombardi goes one, Bill Walsh goes two, and then Bill Polian gets to pick, and he took two coaches. Apparently they let him have two coaches. He took the two coaches that worked for him. He took Marv Levy and Tony Dungy.
Why does he get two coaches?
I don't know. Because so he can take both of his guys who are still alive and feel okay about himself. Peter King took Chuck Knoll. You notice somebody who's not here yet? Somebody took Don Shula.
No Belichick yet.
Joe Gibbs was then taken.
I love the Chuck Knoll pick, by the way.
Yeah?
Love that
pick. See, I love the Don Shula pick. I think Shula won. He went to Super Bowls in Miami with three completely different kind of quarterbacks in Greasy and then David Woodley. He went to a Super Bowl with David freaking Woodley. And then, of course, Marino. Shula, Gibbs, and then Gil Brandt took Tom Landry.
Of course.
His own coach.
Yeah.
And then finally, Bill Belichick goes at that point. So Belichick is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Is the 10th coach chosen if you count both of Bill Polian's picks.
Fairly argued as the best coach of all time.
I think so. Then Don Coryell, Paul Brown, Ron Wolf took Curly Lambeau. Homer! Homer Packer pick, And then John Madden went dead last among the coaches.
But there's, I mean, there's some really fascinating stuff in here, honestly.
Tell me.
Like Gil Brandt has, he's got Walter Payton and Jim Brown in the same backfield. I don't know how that would work, but I like it. I like the idea. I don't see how it works. I'm offended that Richard Dent went ahead of Dan Hampton in this draft.
Yeah, understandably so. I love text of the day, maybe from Mail Dog. He took Bradshaw because he needed to justify punting and kicking so many field goals. He took Bradshaw because I really want to use my punter and my kicker. West Loop Tom, did Dan Fouts draft Patrick Manley? There aren't that many good long snappers. It appears he did not. I don't think he did. And this text, The Entertaining Punter is an underrated Guided by Voices album. See, now I could believe that because Robert Pollard made about 100 albums, some of them in his bedroom. This segment is brought to you by Go-Go Squeeze. Things are so different today. Kids have turned down snack time trades because of Go-Go Squeeze. All natural, just 100% orchard fresh apples and other wholesome fruit. Kids love it, and so will yours. Go-Go Squeeze. We'll be back in about 4 to 5 minutes with your phone calls and then some good baseball conversation top of the hour.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's me trying to do my Chris Berman as he's doing the football voice. And I called Ray Nitschke Nietzsche, Friedrich Nietzsche.
You know, when you looked into the Green Bay Packers abyss, it looked into you too as well, Barry Rosner. It speaks in Rosner here on 670 The Score. There's a lot going on. A lot going on here in the world. A lot of texting going on. Bill's phone lines are buzzing, etc. Some people are wondering why didn't Dan Fouts take Pat Manley? Where did Abe Gibron go in the best NFL coach?
That's mean spirited.
in that particular round and all those other things. People are wondering, and this guy is a genuine fan of punters, Todd Sauerbrunn. True story, I was raised a Packers fan. My favorite Bear player was Todd Sauerbrunn, simply because he entertained me. True story.
I voted for Todd Sauerbrunn in the 2008 presidential election. I did. I was at a bar one night, and you know everyone was talking about the election. They said, who are you going to vote for? I said, I don't know. I haven't found a guy yet. I'm just going to vote in. I need a name. I'm just going to write in anybody because I ain't voting for one of these two guys. And the guy said, why not Todd Sauerbrunn? I said, done. Good enough.
Way to make a mockery of the American election system, Barry.
Well, how you feeling about it these days? I voted for the sweet meteor of death. Uh-huh. And
hey, speaking of that, we have something to get to.
Yeah, we should get to that today. I have news along those lines.
I would like to get to that today. You have, I mean, if that's not a tease, if that does not get you in, folks, then there it is. But we will continue to talk about some of the baseball fallings out. Did you see that the crowd turned ugly at the Big Three basketball tournament in Philadelphia? I'm into the Big Three. They're coming here this weekend. And I love the 3-on-3. I love that it's all people that I remember from the not too distant past. But Allen Iverson is the player coach for his team, and they get to Philadelphia, and Iverson doesn't play. And the crowd is like chanting, we want AI. We want AI. We want the answer. And he never went in. He never checked himself in. And eventually the crowd turned ugly, and people started to boo. And they're booing Allen Iverson. They're booing at the Big Three. It was brutal. He stood on the sidelines with the arms folded. Everybody's screaming for him. And then after halftime, half of the crowd left. They bailed. Apparently he was hurt and he'd been told that.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.